This is the August 24 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Jim McCormick. He's at agmarket.net out of Barrington, Illinois. Chuck Shelby is here from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And Garrett Toy is with us. He's from Stockton, Illinois and agtradertalk.com. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'll remind you that you can visit us all next week, and many of the analysts that you hear on the air, politicians and the agricultural economists, crop scientist, and many of the faculty at the University of Illinois during the Farm Progress Show will be in the University of Illinois tent. If you check the calendar at willag.org, you'll see exactly where that tent is. There's a link in the map section of the calendar, and you'll see a list of who maybe more likely topics that we'll be covering and what times. But generally speaking, we'll be up at 10 a.m., noon and 2 p.m. daily at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, and we sure do hope to see you there. Now let's get a list of items for our Commodity Week program from our analyst. Chuck Shelby, I'll start with you. What's on your list that we should discuss today?
Well, I think the most important thing would be how much will the heat and dryness in the next 2 to 3 weeks impact whatever the yield may be after the crop tour?
Garrett Toy from AgTraderTalk.com.
I think that's exactly right with Chuck. I think it's crop tour is a snapshot in time for this week, and what the final numbers are going to be are going to be quite different possibly, but also the continued demand issues that we continue to see out here on the export front with Brazilian supplies undermining our export program.
And finally, Jim McCormick.
Well, I think, Todd, they hit two major topics. Obviously, you got the supply issues with the hot weather coming in, and then also demand, I mean, the export situation. And then also what's going on in the Panama Canal, the dryness issues there as well, is what I think potentially could be a problem of the Mississippi River. If we do not start seeing rain soon, are we going to see a deja vu of low river levels and, you know, high freight rates?
Well, let's start with this week's crop tour the Pro Farmer has put on. This is an annual event. Started out as an Illinois Farm Bureau event. I was on it in 91 the first time. So this is an event that has been around for a very, very long time. If you were following along with us during the week, I think you probably heard some numbers that were coming out of both the western part of Iowa, the middle part of Iowa, and the eastern part of Illinois that weren't as good maybe as I had expected. Chuck Shelby, from your farmer perspective, what do you think this crop looks like?
I think the variability is out there. I mean, in our own neighborhood, I can find corn. It's excellent. Going to be 240, 250 possibly, but I can go down the road and see a crop that struggled with different reasons and might only be 150, 175. So as we go across the country, the same thing, I think, is occurring. And I think the biggest component of this is this heat and dryness at the wrong time of the year. It may impact the soybeans much more than the corn, but it doesn't help the corn yield at this point either.
Yeah, so grain fill is pretty far along, relatively speaking, for corn. How far along is your crop at this time?
Most of it is in a dense stage, and with the heat, I think it's going to push it along. So pretty much, you know, it's getting to maturity, and again, that point of how much it can hurt it. But certainly, again, you'd rather have cooler temperatures and have some moisture for the final fill on it.
And Garrett, I'm going to ask you the same series of questions as well. But Chuck, I want to stay with you just for a second. You're in the dense stage. So right now, are you in your area working on whether you're on a good crop or a very good crop of corn?
In our area, south of Lafayette, Indiana, we're working on a very good crop. We've been fortunate in the last 5 weeks to have 1 or 2 inches of rain per week. But you go north of Lafayette, it's a little different story. They 2 weeks ago got 5 to 6 inches. They have not gotten the rain we've gotten. So again, it's streaky. But, you know, we're very fortunate in our area to have a really good crop, I believe.
Garrett Toy, you are in Stockton, Illinois. That's in the far northwestern part of the state. How far south of the Wisconsin border are you?
Oh, Stockton's 10 miles. My farm is about 4 miles south of the border, so we're pretty close to Wisconsin.
And if you look at the drought monitors for the year, Wisconsin, almost right there at the border, it's almost as if somebody said, don't rain in Wisconsin. Were you in the don't rain area?
We were not, actually. I mean, I think along with Chuck, I mean, we have a good to potentially very good crop. We had the after effects of the dry June, which I think everybody experienced. We won't know what that entails. And obviously, this grain fill period is less than ideal, is the way I describe it. With this heat, it kind of is, I hate to draw an analog to things, but the finish to this crop seems very eerily similar to 2010. When we had the hot August and the hot August overnights, the only difference was we had a drought in Russia that year, and that, the wheat market was kind of doing its own thing too. But, we talked about the tour, and I think it's important for producers to realize is that, at this point from a tour standpoint, they found things relatively, I don't think there's any surprises, but, this crop, I think, is going to look a lot different in 2 weeks or 4 weeks' time.
I have a secondary question for you that I'm wondering about. I know that I have gotten at least one call from a Wisconsin farmer, I would guess within 30 miles of you, clearly had an issue in the month of July related, I think, to the western, possibly the northern corn rootworm breakthroughs. That's been happening in the northeastern part of Iowa, the northwestern part of Illinois, actually all the way over through the DeKalb area. Have you seen any of that issue?
We haven't. My seed provider issues insect alert emails where they're warning us of things. We haven't seen anything with our crops locally. I know what you're talking about, northeast Iowa, kind of across Prairie du Chien, and then draw a line over towards like Platteville in southwest Wisconsin, and then down into DeKalb. It's definitely an issue. I think this late onset weather has also raised concerns about tar spot again. I think that's probably going to rear its ugly head here if we're not too careful. But I do think, with prices where there are still, there's a lot of fungicides that went on this year. It seemed like around here, the plains were definitely active.
I do want to check back with you, Chuck. Tar spot has been an issue in Indiana. Did you see much of that yet this year?
Not really. Again, a lot of guys did spray, but I think the concern might be that tar spot can still come in late and our guy's going to go back and spray again. So I see that concern out there. It's not too bad, but I think guys got it under control with that early spraying on the first go around.
All right, so that's where we'll land on that one. Let's move on to some of the other numbers from the report that came out related to the crop tours on the daily. One of the things that Brian Grady made note of when he gave the Illinois number, which was 193 something or other, was that usually they're about 3.5 bushels lower than what USDA's final is. And he mentioned that he thought they might be wider than that this year. And he didn't give a good set of reasons why, but do you think that that Illinois' crop, which USDA has at 201 at this point, might be a better crop than that? And I guess Jim McCormick, we'll let you get started with this.
Well, I mean, if you look at, like you said, if you look at the historical, what ProFarma came up with, it was very, very close. I think they ended up at 193.7. If you put that adjustment Brian was talking about, it puts you at a 197.2. The USDA currently is at 201. Actually, very close. What I think got a lot of our clients' attention was, ProFarmer a year ago came in at 194.7 on this. So you actually saw a little bit better this time around than a year ago. But I was cautioning a lot of people today, Todd. It was kind of almost like I look at this tour today, kind of like how people looked at the August WASDE number. We looked at the August WASDE report and the beans, especially the government lowered that bean crop. And a lot of people said, well, they lowered it because July weather looked good. But like where I'm at in northern Illinois, we caught some rain. A lot of people said, I think the crop improved between when they took the survey and when it was released. And I think you're going to see maybe the same thing here in Illinois with this tour that Pro Farmer's seeing. And with this extreme heat we're seeing and the, just the lack of rain, the heat breaks here within 24 hours here in northern Illinois. But there's still not a lot of rain out there for the next 2 weeks. And it's just not the right way to finish up this crop. So I would not be surprised if this crop goes downhill and the USDA ends up lowering that crop a little bit when it's all said and done.
Yeah, the one number you did not mention in that through your comments there was that last year USDA's final number for Illinois was 214 bushels the acre, a very, very big corn crop. When you were listening back, Garrett Toy, to what was coming off and reading what was happening in Iowa on the tour, and I know you have some context within the Des Moines area, did the numbers make sense to you?
They did. I mean, I think the biggest surprise was that District 7, which is far what basically, Iowa's a rectangle, obviously. District 7 is that far west center square. It's south of Highway 20, north of I-80. Seeing the yields come in that considerably below last year, that southwest corner of Iowa caught some rains, and they actually had better yields than obviously northwest Iowa. They can grow a crop any year. I don't think there's, I think the only surprise, the comments that I received were that that District 7 was so much poorer year over year on yield and pod counts. And then you're going to find out even today, when they finish the rest of the state of Iowa, that area of northeast Iowa, when they get into Waterloo, I think they're going to find some issues up in there as well. It's been exceptionally dry this summer. So I don't think there's any complaints about Iowa. I think, like Jim said, is that, this is a snapshot in the point of time, and at this point from the five states they've gone through with whole numbers, it doesn't look like there's going to be too much deviation from the USDA. Maybe Ohio a little bit higher, maybe South Dakota a little bit higher, maybe Nebraska a little bit lower, compared to where they are last year and then the USDA's change or the USDA's assessment in August versus last year. I think the most important thing here, though, is these pod counts, and because there's a little bit of science here is that, pod counts are generally up everywhere across the board except for Nebraska. So that implies a higher yield, which the USDA, showed in August with the exception of Illinois. But that means that we need rain. We don't need this heat. It's all about finishing weather in these soybeans. So the pod counts are there, but aborting these pods or putting any pod weight or pods or soybeans in these pods, that's another story.
And Chuck Shelby, I'll ask you about that Center West district in Iowa. That's Crop Reporting District 4 that Sherman Newland was traveling through, one of your colleagues there at Risk Management Commodities. Did you have some discussions with him about what that looked like? We had them on the air, but I'm wondering what he told you.
Well, he was surprised to see the results of what that was. It wasn't as good as they thought, but Sherman kind of felt in talking to farmers out there that it's been really dry out there and the subsoil reserves, and even in Nebraska was going through the same situation where the guys were discussing they can't irrigate their way out of a drought. So I think that's kind of a cumulative effect that the western areas of Iowa and you got to throw Nebraska in there have just suffered through such dry weather that it showed up when, we haven't had really adequate rainfall out that way. We've had times when you get some big rains, but you look at it overall, a lot of Iowa is still in a drought. So, that's got to have an impact when your subsoil moisture is not adequate to carry the crop without constant rainfall.
And I take it that you were having this discussion not just about this year, but this is a continuing drought that's 3 years old. It's something that USDA has talked about, the larger droughts in the western United States that can have traced their roots much further back, at least when you can see them 1,400 years ago and what kind of impacts they had then, and then what might be happening longer term at this point. So these droughts would have an impact this year, and it really has probably. Will it have an impact, do you think, Chuck, on what producers decide to put in the ground this fall? Will they go more to crops that can manage drought better?
Well, I think it depends if we can recharge the subsoil. I mean, it's still dry here in Illinois, Indiana. There's not a lot of tiles that are running. So I think you go across the Corn Belt. We've had timely rains. That's made a big difference. But I look at it, you look at the drought map, we have need to recharge our subsoil during the course of the winter or fall or whenever it might be. So there's a point there where I think guys, especially when we look at 24 and start looking, well, what's the price of November 24 beans and December corn? I think it will have an impact, especially if the bean market can continue to run because of tight supplies and good demand.
Jim McCormick, that brings me to the Mississippi River and the ability to move crop to the export marketplace. What are your fears?
Well, I mean, if you look at it, there's just, you know, if you look at the river levels on the gauges, they're dropping relatively rapidly. It looks like that could pick up speed if we do not get rain. There's not a lot of rain in a long range forecast that I've been watching. And we saw what happened, you know, a year ago when it happened, the barge rates went up. It made it a lot more expensive to get stuff down to the ports. We are just starting to get competitively priced with South America. So all that we really need is a higher freight rate to get it down there. And then the other problem we're dealing with, Todd, is if you are bringing grain out of the New Orleans and bring it through the Panama Canal, due to El Nino, is running short of water, plain and simple. And it's cost an extra $10 a ton to get grain through the Panama Canal. So like I said, as the prices have gone down, we maybe get a little bit more competitively priced out of South America. You know, if the rain doesn't come, we may essentially get the freight charges too high to essentially make us uncompetitive again. So something we need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and this is just a difference in a route where the South Americans might come out of their southern ports and go south around the tip of Africa to Asia and from the United States. If you live in the Dakotas, you can go out the PNW and make that trip across the Atlantic Ocean, or the Pacific Ocean, rather, or you have to come out of New Orleans or someplace along the southern border of the United States and make a trip through the Panama Canal, and that's going to be a bottleneck potentially, which brings us, of course, to China, its economy, and just the export market in general. I'm wondering what you were hoping to talk about, Garrett, in this area, because you were suggesting there are continued demand issues, and they may be domestic as well, but I'm guessing you're thinking about the export market.
No, it's absolutely export market, and it's not so much, I don't think the world demand is poor. I just think that there's other supplies cheaper. And as Jim kind of mentioned, a lot of that is freight driven. You know, South Korea came in here this week, and U.S. corn wasn't even offered because the freight difference was that much more substantial. And, you know, as you mentioned before, you know, the potential to ship things or ship grain off the PNW, there's absolutely nothing. There's zero export book off the PNW. I'm not really sure what those export houses are going to be doing this fall. But if you look at the rail bids out of the Western Corn Belt, there's nothing going in the PNW. So it's just purely a function of the size of the South American crop. And the interesting things I've noticed is the currency devaluations. The South American farmers selling is very fluid. They'll sell corn for a month, and then they'll be cheaper than U.S. corn for 4 to 6 weeks. And then, well, the Chinese crusher, the Brazilian crusher, will our crush margins are so poor, so they'll offer soybeans back into the export market. Well, now they're cheaper beans here when we've been in the market for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. So they have ample supplies. There's no real limiting factors. I read this week about the increased volumes that they're seeing out of the northern ports. It's just a function of when does the Brazilian farmer run out of grain that it turns into our time to shine. Now, the caveat to that is that the meal market, from the soybean crusher standpoint, that demand, you know, we are the cheapest meal in the world. You know, the Brazilian crush margins are poor. Argentina doesn't have soybeans. And that that should mean that if you're a producer, you know, that the main buyer is a crush market, especially tributary to the export market, you should be sitting in the catbird seat.
I want to bring some politics into this just a little bit, Chuck Shelby, and I don't know how much you will have been following this, but should there be concern, and we've talked often now about the size of agriculture in Brazil and its expansion, its ability to export out into the marketplace for soybeans to begin with, and now for corn with its second and third corn crop. But there also is BRICS, which is a grouping of world economies, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And it feels like that could be a very big trading bloc that could become an enormous issue for the United States. Have you been thinking about what that means and been watching it closely?
It's absolutely becoming, you know, a big issue as we move forward. Those countries are grouping together. You know, they seem to be more politically aligned at this point in time, and they're looking to grow that coalition. So it certainly is concerning as a U.S. producer. As we move forward, they seem to be like China continues to make alliances and want to buy from Brazil. You know, one of my concerns for next year is we had Argentina had a problem this year, but we got to be aware that what if both Argentina and Brazil have a good crop next year? That's going to put even more pressure on U.S. crops. And so, yes, overall, that is a big problem, and I don't think it's going away. It's only growing as we move into the coming years.
I'm going to set aside new crop at this point just for a second and talk about the 2024 growing season and get an idea, because last fall there were opportunities for both corn and soybeans, particularly for corn, to sell at much higher prices. And as I listen over the last month or so, I feel as if the trade, the analysts might be thinking we need to consider what 2024 looks like. Jim McCormick, is that something you and the agmarket.net folks go through? And then Chuck and Garrett, you can answer as well.
No, we're definitely encouraging producers to take a look at this 2024. I'm in the camp that, you know, if you look at these export numbers, I think they're still way too high. You know, our commercial context say the government is probably overstating corn exports by an additional 200 million too much. And then the beans. So I think a weak export demand combined with a big South American crop, I think next spring could just be a train wreck. So we're encouraging producers to get a little bit aggressive in it. Something we're encouraging producers to do, Todd, is, and we had some success with this last year, is look at the short dated options. Look at like the March short dated $5 corn put. You buy the put, it puts a floor under the market until the last few days of February. That allows you at least to have a floor in place until you see what the crop insurance is. So we are trying to be a little bit proactive to make sure these prices aren't great, but we do think they could be unfortunately a lot lower. If you look at the current stocks to use, we're at about projected at 15%, Todd. If you look back from 2013 through 2018, relatively recent history, stocks use ended up around 12-13% almost every one of those years. And the average farm price, all five of those years, are right around that 350 zone. So by historical standards, with the current stocks use projection for this crop year, we are overvalued. And we don't want to be caught unpriced if the market starts to essentially say, hey, this price is overvalued, and we go a lot lower than people think it could.
I think it's a concern here. I think what's happened in the last 3 years, producers have seen a market that found unusual reasons to rally. So we got in the mindset that that was going to continue, and it did longer than we thought. So when we look out there at $5 corn and $13 bean futures, well, that's not, you know, really enticing us because we're so used to the market rallying and going beyond what we thought. But adjustment and mindset is necessary here. And again, when you look at the fact that South America, both those Argentina and Brazil, if they end up having a good crop and we have a carry out of 2 billion, we're going to be struggling going into the 24 growing season unless the demand really comes back to us. And there's a multitude of reasons, again, why that may happen or may not happen. But so, yes, we got to start looking at that. We got to go back to marketing and having a plan. Realistically, in the past 3 years, you really didn't have to do much because the market took care of itself. It rallied and you had a price that was very profitable. So, yeah, we got our work cut out for us as producers. We got to get back in the mindset of protecting profit on her farm. And that's a mindset change that really has to happen during the course of the winter going into 24.
In the end here, I'd like to tie a couple points that Jim said and Chuck said is if we do have issues and low water on the river, what happened last year is basis collapsed, and if you didn't have storage and if you're a marketer who is selling grain off the combine, that hurt a lot. And that can make or break a year. So, if you're sitting here with storage, you're sitting in a better position. But, watch your corn spreads out here. If basis collapse, they're going to widen. We already kind of are at historically wide levels. These July corn spread at 26.5. It's about a penny and a half off its recent lows. We don't typically trade that spread wider than 30 cents. So manage your space, manage your storage, especially, if we do have a big crop. If we have, the $64,000 question is if these river issues cause us freight to spike, because combine that with a lack of an export program, and that could just be a black swan that nobody wants. And but as far as next year is concerned, I agree with Jim. In theory, at face value, given the acres, and we, have a lot of land grant university, professors who believe that the FSA acres suggest that corn acres could go up. Rotationary, that should suggest beans. So, we're kind of comfortable where we're at as far as marketing for 22-23. So we've already moved towards 23-24, making some sales above $5. And scaling up of them to 5.25 here just to get some, nothing big, 5-10%, something like that, just to get on the board.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. We'll start with you today.
Well, I think we may have a few opportunities yet before we get into harvest, but I hope producers start learning to think about and managing the crop they got that's going to come out of the field and make arrangements to, cover what they got and what they need to sell.
Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net in Barrington, Illinois.
I agree. We're going to probably have a little bit of volatility in the market as we debate what's happened with this heat. I do think producers need to lock in profits when they have that opportunity. The cost of money is so much more than we're used to with the higher interest rates that's going to be around for us. So storing corn, it's a lot more expensive than it used to be. So make sure you, do the pencil to it. Make sure, you also look at 24.
And Garrett Toy of AgTraderTalk.com out of Stockton, Illinois.
Yeah, I think that, we're on the cusp here of whether we have an 80-20 rule where it's only 20% of the time we do rally into harvest. And given this heat that we've had in August, we don't know if this is going to be that 20% year, but it kind of looks like it could be. But that being said here, I think that we need to recognize, I'm friendly soybeans, but typically we, since 2008, November beans don't really like to trade above $14, between now and harvest. Last year in 2012 were the only 2 years where we've seen no beans trade above these levels. And I think that, the bean strength that we have out here is kind of lending support to the corn market, my opinion. And I agree with Jim as far as what the stocks to use ratio suggests for on-farm prices. So I think you need to be cognizant and be aggressive sellers on rallies.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. You can listen to the whole program anytime you'd like right there on the website. Our thanks go to our panelists this week. They include Jim McCormick, Chuck Shelby, and Garrett Toy. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.